moments where like propaganda is being created in real time. And holy fuck, is there not a lot of propaganda being created in real time?
Dude, we'll get into it in the fucking episode, but like I was telling my friends, first of all, it is awesome. Like I have five different group chats and this popped off in all five group chats, like the normie and non-normie one. Like the non-normie ones obviously was gonna pop off because we're all football heads, we all love the fucking game, etc. and so on. The normie ones, it's like, is everyone following this? This is insane. And I'm like, absolutely. And then I crack my knuckles and I'm like, let me talk to you about a thing called propaganda.
Be honest, Amr, is it popping off in all the group chats you're in because you have multiple accounts and you're posting it to drive engagement?
It's all him.
Yeah.
No.
This is an old Russian technique we call Mastryovska. Get it?
Yeah.
And in my class, we call it black propaganda. No one knows who's spinning this around. All right. So, hey, everybody. It is Sunday, November 10th, 7 p.m. Welcome to another episode of Propagandos. Connor here, joined as always by Alec. And we are thrilled to welcome back beloved guest of the show, Amr. Amr, thank you so much for joining us on what we hope to be a very timely discussion in the wild, wild world of European sports.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Okay, this is going to be a quick one, so I'm just going to set us up. So a funny thing happened. I think I woke up, it's probably Friday morning when I was scrolling through tweets, and I saw this video. So I woke up and I saw a video, and the video showed, it was just like basically a street brawl, right, where some dude, you know, apparently according to the tweet is, you know, some Zionist thug or something, I don't know, right, gets what I believe is called Samoan dropped, right? This other dude, this larger man, right, like throws off his sweatshirt, and then this dude approaches him and tries to like jump kick him, and he slightly dodges the jump kick, grabs this dude onto his back and slams him into the ground, right? And then there's a slow motion version of it, and I was like, huh, that's pretty funny. Okay, I go to work, I come back Saturday morning, I wake up and I read tweets and I'm like, wait, what the fuck? That was in Amsterdam? What the fuck? They're saying there was a pogrom? Like Joe Biden is tweeting about this? Like various, you know, notable leaders of the free world are tweeting about this? What the fuck?
Justin Trudeau, Ursula von der Leyen.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, according to Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu, this is, let me quote him, one of the worst European anti-Semitic pogrom of the 21st century.
How can some Israeli organization describe it as Kristallnacht 2.0?
Yes, I saw that as well.
And then like I, before even that happened, I was seeing all of these posts by these, you know, various libs that I follow, right? These like blue and on people, basically, right? Now that the election's over, and they're like, Trump elected and pogroms in Europe. Jesus Christ, we're really returning to, and it's like, what are we talking about? So if you're American and you're not a football fan, we're having Amr on to explain what the fuck is going on.
And listeners, that includes me. I'm not a football fan. I am, I call it soccer, but for the sake of this episode, I will call it football, and I'm not engaged at all. So I will be learning along with y'all.
So Israelis got beat up in Amsterdam after causing quite a bit of trouble and annoying a lot of people. Not Dutch Jews, Israelis. And Amr, why are these Israelis in Amsterdam?
Okay. Timeline. First of all, Israeli football clubs and the Israeli national team plays its sports in European competition. The reason for that is because a bunch of countries in Asia don't want to play Israel because they're a genocidal entity. This includes Syria, Saudi Arabia, Iran, etc., and so on. So because of that, the Israeli national team, like the national team and football clubs, and this also extends to basketball, by the way, and other sports, but for the purposes of this episode, we'll do football. Their football clubs and the national team play their regional competitions in Europe. Now, what that means is that, and because this is, you know, difficult to understand in club level, because for Americans, NFL, NBA, it's all like America and Canada only. In European sports, you have the national league in which you play other clubs from your same country. And then if you do really well at the end of the season, you qualify to European competition next season. And European competition is like, there's three tiers of them. There's the most elite, the middle, and then the lowest. And then when you qualify, you play against other clubs from Europe. So like a club from Poland can play a club from Germany, or a club from Greece can play a club from Spain, et cetera, and so on. Maccabi Tel Aviv, for being really successful in the Israeli National League last year, qualified for what's called the Europa League, which is the middle tier of European football, which is usually where Israeli clubs end up, middle and lower. They never really reach the highest tier, which is the Champions League. They're never that good for it. They never qualify. But for the middle, Europa and Conference League is the lowest one. You'll have an Israeli club or two every year. Usually it's Maccabi Tel Aviv or Hapoel Tel Aviv. They're usually the best in the country. And they would, you know, in this year, it's Maccabi Tel Aviv. And by the way, I have another thing as another caveat. Most Israeli clubs will have a Maccabi X so-and-so city or a Hapoel so-and-so city. And then goes back to the split between sort of labor Zionism and revisionist Zionism, a sort of Ben-Gurion form of socialist Zionism and the sort of psychotic nationalism of Jabotinsky with Likud now and Netanyahu. The sports manifestation of that divide is you have Hapoel, which formed out of socialist clubs, and Maccabi, which is based on the biblical Maccabees, and is the right-wing clubs usually. Maccabi Tel Aviv are probably only like, you know, outranked by how vile and evil their fans are by the club Beitar Jerusalem, who have an explicit policy of not signing Arab players. And their fans Jesus once stormed Christ. The training ground to yell at a bunch of people because the club signed not Arabs, but Muslim Chechen players. Two Muslim Chechen players were signed. And the ultras of Beitar Jerusalem called La Familia got really upset. So they stormed the training ground and beat a bunch of people up.
La Familia. I mean, you're kidding, right? Like actually doing mob shit.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It's psychotic behavior. But anyways, Maccabi Tel Aviv is like the second worst in that sense, in that like they're right wing. Their rivals, Hapoel Tel Aviv, are considered left wing. But then again, like, you know, as an aside, what really is left wing in a genocidal entity? So it's like Strasser versus, you know, Rome or whatever, or Strasser versus Himmler. But anyways, the fans of Maccabi will chant about their left-wing rivals being like, we will rape you, we will drink your blood. I'm serious. The actual chants that the fans will sing. Anyways, Maccabi have an away game at Ajax. Ajax are the club that is based in Amsterdam. The Maccabi fans, because Israel is far away from the Netherlands, typically with away games, you fly in or if your countries are really close, you'll even do like bus convoys, like coach convoys or trains, because Europe is sort of civilized like that. Their transit's actually pretty good, unlike America and Canada. But because Israel is far, they flew in the night before, Wednesday. The game was on Thursday. They flew in on Wednesday. And as soon as they landed, they were corralled into, like, you know, areas of town where they started singing death to Arabs. Let the IDF win so we could fuck Arabs. There are no schools in Gaza because there's no children there. Very charming. The typical behavior expected of the average Israeli tourist, if you will.
And there's lots of videos of this, by the way. Like, videos posted by them, like, doing
they're
this.
They're happy
like,
to yeah, do that. We love not, yeah.
Welcome to Amsterdam. Fuck you guys. It's like
Important point. I forgot that. Just before, on Wednesday, as they flew out, Israeli media revealed that Mossad had sent agents embedded with them. Now, this, it's weird and it's not weird. So what's not weird is that usually with big away games, the police of the fans that are traveling, like the country where the fans are coming from, will send a few embedded undercovers in case trouble kicks off. This is very common with ultra fan groups, etc., in Europe, because of the history of hooliganism, which again, America doesn't really understand, but the sort of history of European hooliganism has led to this sort of the systemic police responses, including undercovers. Now, the problem is, Mossad is like intelligence. The role for these embedded are usually like national police services, the FBI, if you will.
These aren't undercover football cops, right? This is like CIA.
Whose job? Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, usually it's like undercover football cops. These guys are like the CIA being sent to like track, like, I don't know, fucking Pittsburgh Steelers fans in Philly or whatever. Like, what are we doing here? The Israeli press are the ones that reveal it too. It's not like, oh, this is a conspiracy theory or whatever. No, the Israeli press, like, yeah, we're sending Mossad in with these guys because, quote unquote, we're foreseeing trouble. So they land, the Mossad guys and the non-Mossad guys, they land in Amsterdam and they start doing this ogreish shit. Aside from the singing, they also try and find flags of Palestine, like Palestine flags that they ripped down from the balconies and windows of local residents. And they start burning those flags and singing things like make Palestine burn, etc. and so on. The flag burning, I've seen one video of that. I've heard multiple situations. I've also seen videos and read reports of groups of Maccabee fans harassing anyone that looks vaguely brown or Arab. Amsterdam has a big North African population, so Moroccans and Algerians. You know, they're harassing Arab-looking people. There's a video of them attacking a cab, like a taxi, that the driver was Moroccan, like attacking the taxi with chains and sticks. There's videos of them, like, just going on the subway and being very aggro with anyone that looks vaguely a racial minority, which, again, Amsterdam, big North African population.
These guys came pre-aggro, right? Like, they show up and start, like, smashing the fucking place up, which is fucking
usually,
wild,
like,
right?
You'd wait a few, like, this would happen, like, either after the game or like just before the game if everyone's really drunk.
When they're all wasted. Yeah. They've been at the bar all day and then kerfuffles happen. Sometimes they shut the game down, right? Like sometimes they don't let those guys in, they go to jail, or after the game, right? Like late night shit and all these guys get busted and get thrown in fucking jail for the night, right?
Yeah, it's mostly late night shit, but this was like the night before the game. Anyways, the story of what's happening spread across Amsterdam. People are finding out, oh, these people are awful. That night ends. Thursday, the day of the game, they get corralled into Dam Square, which is the big square in Amsterdam. They're drinking all day. They're fucking, you know, chanting death to Arabs again, etc. They get corralled to the game, which, as an aside, like, this is, again, common behavior in Europe because of the history of hooliganism. There's been these set protocols that have been followed by most Western and Central European countries. Eastern Europe is a bit different, but neither here nor there. Usually, typically, with European away games, the cops will corral you into a big square. You're allowed to hang out there. Like, if you're the away fans, I mean. The cops will corral away fans into a square. You'll drink, you'll sing, you'll chant for, like, half the afternoon. And then the game is in the early evening, so you get corralled to the game either by marching on a specified route, which is closed off by the cops to, like, get you to the stadium away from, like, the home fans who might try to ambush you, or through buses if the stadium is a bit far. Either ways, you get to the game, and then after the game, the cops will keep you in the stadium for about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, just so that the home fans could clear out. Because previously in the 70s and 80s, during the height of hooliganism, home fans, or the people, like the in terms of hooligans and football firms, the locals of a city will wait for the away fans to leave the stadium to ambush them and pick them off in small groups. So now the cops' method of control is keeping them in the stadium until the way has been cleared, and then they'll sort of escort them back to, like, the main square where they came from. And usually that main square is picked because most of the hotels the away fans will stay at are in that area, right? The bars are there, the away fans are there. It's one location that can be easily monitored. Anyways, in this case, they arrive at the stadium, and there was supposed to be a minute silence before the game for the victims of the flooding in Valencia in Spain. Now, again, I don't know if American sports do this. I don't believe they do, because I've been to enough NBA and NHL games where I haven't seen action like this happen. But in football, when big catastrophes happen, like the earthquake in Turkey or the flooding in Valencia, they'll do a minute silence before the game. Or like
we just, do that every single American sports game opens up with the national anthem, and if there is like a great tragedy afterwards, we'll take a minute of silence to remember the fallen, or like a Veterans Day game, which is tomorrow.
I've seen the Veterans Day one, but with Europe, there's a lot more. It's a lot more common. It's a lot more common, especially when a player of a club dies, the club will do a minute silence. But then this was because of the flooding, killed some 200, 300 people. So there's like supposed to be a minute silence. And usually in Europe, the minute silence is done just before the game kicks off. So like you do all the pregame stuff first. And then just before the game kicks off, the referee will signal for both players to come and stand in a huddle around the center circle. And then sort of everyone in the stadium stands up and you'll have a minute silence and then the game starts. Now, Israelis, being, again, the lovely tourists that they are, started singing and chanting as soon as the minute silence began. Like, if they were drumming, they've been setting off flares. And I've read that part of that is also because the Israelis are, like, taking out their anger on Spain, because Spain has been particularly outspoken against Israel, like the national government of Spain. But then, you know, whether it's just general boorishness or specific boorishness, it's still, you know, that they're singing and chanting at a moment's silence for a bunch of people who died in flooding.
By the way, this like is seen on like national TV broadcast. Like the camera pans over and they're like, oh, what's all this commotion? They're just going ape shit in the stands.
Maccabi, and like all the flares and stuff, and the rest of the stadium, like you can hear a pin drop, like everyone else sort of standing and like looking bemused, like what's going on over here. And you know, football fans are like, whenever there's like moment silence, sometimes they have been violated when it's like particularly political. So like when the Queen of England died, certain fan bases of certain clubs didn't respect the minute silence because it's a fucking queen. If you're from Liverpool or Manchester, you don't much care for that shit. But this was like just Spanish people who died in a fucking flood. Like, come on, man. Anyways, they violate the minute silence. Everyone's sort of pissed off. The game goes on. Maccabi lose 5-0.
Yeah, they get washed, by the way. They get fucking washed. They get rinsed.
And then here's where I'm still not certain. I've been trying to figure out the timeline after this. Again, typically, the fans are supposed to be kept in the stadium until the way is clear. This seems to have happened as far as I know, but I'm not sure yet, because the videos that come out after is where things get interesting.
Meaning all the home team people leave, right? And like cops can like establish basically a perimeter outside the stadium. And like sometimes even, right, like Amr, like the buses will pull up or whatever. And then these guys are escorted out and they either get into buses or they like get taken to the square where all the hotels are, something like that.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Exactly.
And sometimes they have to wait a while in the stadium.
An hour or two, typically, yeah.
Because for Americans are not going to understand that or know that. Like, when the game's over, everybody just files out of the stadium, right?
It fucking tickles me when I go to an American game and I see fans of different, like, the rival franchises or whatever, like Steelers, Eagles or whatever, just sitting next to each other normally. And I'm like, man, in Europe, like, if you're a fan of the away side and you're sitting in the home section in Europe, you sit down, you don't wear any fucking colors, you don't wear any jersey to show that you're an away fan, and if your team scores, you're not celebrating, because that shit is like big no-no. Like, you sit there and you're like just gritting your teeth, you're like yeah, okay. Like the away home dynamic is something that I don't think Americans can really grasp the history of that in Europe. Like everything from Heysel to Hillsborough to, I mean, Hillsborough was complete abdication of duty by the cost, but none of that's neither here nor there. Just like fans and fan violence, and not something like the way it doesn't know. Like I was talking earlier, and what's it called? Again, the word escapes me. Where you guys go to a parking lot and have chili and drink for the morning.
Tailgating.
Yeah, like the idea of tailgating in Europe would everyone go and say, like, what do you mean you're having beers with the rival fans? Like, are you stupid? Are you moron?
We're all Americans, Amr. We're all Americans. There's a bunch of contrived movies, actually, where like tailgating is a process. It like elevates people above like the social ills of America, like racism.
Yeah. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
American sports. We've got an episode that we're kind of cooking up on this, but American sports movies are a really good way for white Americans to be like, we're not that bad. Come on. I mean,
we're not that bad. We can bond over football.
Yeah.
We can bond over these like predominantly African American guys getting paid sometimes millions, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Look,
to give themselves CTE.
I will say I enjoy the occasional sports movie. I'm a big fan of Coach Carter, Remember the Titans, good movies. Mm-hmm. But it is, Americans have a weird psychotic optimism, and it permeates every aspect of society.
I will say
there is one sports movie that does a actually like cogent social critique. And it is Adam Sandler's The Longest Yard, where the warden's like, y'all prisoners gonna play the other prison. And it's about like the prison system. It's very,
we're gonna make them fight.
Yeah.
There's, funny enough, there's a football, like European football equivalent. The stereotype of prisoners playing other prisoners in a sport with like the catharsis coming with, or rather the prisoners playing the guards in a sport and the catharsis coming and the prisoners winning, it transcends sports. Like it's like, like all sports have that type of movie, that type of plot. Vinnie Jones starred in one, I forget what it's fucking called, where he's like, he's in prison. Mean Machine. It's Mean Machine. He becomes the best player on the prison side and they beat the guards. Anyways, tangent there. The fans are corralled back into the square at some point. Again, the timeline now becomes a bit vague. And after that, you see videos of like small groups of Maccabi fans wandering around Amsterdam, being ambushed by the angriest, biggest Moroccans you've ever seen in your entire life. Like guys who have been pissed off because they've been seeing a year of genocide on their television. They've seen babies' heads blown off, etc., and so on. And then coupled to that, for the past day and a half, they've been seeing videos of like cab drivers being beaten and people being yelled at and chants like death to Arabs. So like you see like small groups of Maccabi fans being ambushed and like beaten up. Now here's where things like to the propaganda angle. This is where I need to explain this to your American listeners. Nothing that happened that night in terms of the violence, okay? And I'm not saying I condone or not condone the violence. This is a moral judgment. Nothing that happened that night is extraordinary by European football violence standards, okay? These things happen in Europe. Even with the best police control, you'll have nights where scraps happen. Groups of fans of different clubs will have like little running street fights, okay?
And to be honest, some of these dudes did get their ass beat. I mean, it's funny to me, right? A guy got thrown. It's Amsterdam, right? So a guy has to get thrown into the fucking locks, right?
Yes, in the canal. Yeah,
A guy got thrown into the canal.
Classic Amsterdam. Like if you're making an action movie in Amsterdam, you have to have that scene. It's kind of like the equivalent of like whenever there's an action movie and it's set in Tokyo, you have to have the neon signs and everything. Yeah. And then they have to run into a backroom kitchen with fat guys like chopping meat, you know.
They go on the subway and they have to be quiet, right? Or something like that. Yeah.
Anyways, my experience talking to a bunch of people involved in European football violence, like this was, again, yes, people got their ass beat, but the forms have been observed. The rules have been observed. There were no knives. There were no guns. There were no bats or weapons of any kind. Most of it was fists and kicking. Was I amused? Absolutely. I think Israelis getting their asses kicked is hilarious. But in terms of like the way it was described, like this violence is like a slow Tuesday in certain parts of Eastern Europe, like in terms of like, you know, fans fighting one another.
If this happened when I was growing up in Poland, if this happened, it would probably make the news, but it certainly wouldn't lead. I mean,
yes,
the Israeli angle notwithstanding, right? If this was just, you know.
But that's the thing. The reason it led is because of the Israeli angle.
Exactly.
Like if this happened, I mean, like Marseille and PSG fans, like it would be like, okay, this is the rivalry, this happened. And obviously there'll be news articles and be like, you shouldn't do this, guys. But like, pogrom, really? What are we doing here? And again, the violence was, by all accounts, average. There's if you look at the reports, 5 people were hospitalized and were discharged the next day. 12 people in total were wounded, as in like enough to require medical attention. So like these are very low. This is amateur numbers. You know, get them out of here. This is amateur numbers. Was it 2 seasons ago or 3 seasons ago where Feyenoord, another Dutch team, was in Europe, and every time their away fans went to they had a trip to Roma, they had a trip to Galatasaray, and someplace in Spain, I believe it was Sevilla, and every time they arrived, it was like Genghis Khan arrived to your village, like. You know, they destroyed the Trevi Fountain, first of all. I think it was a Trevi Fountain. They destroyed one of the famous fountains in Rome with graffiti. They were like just gangs of them beating the crap out of anyone who looked like a local. But yeah, this was the violence that we saw in Amsterdam was, first of all, aside from it being provoked by the Israeli boorish behavior, was really not that bad. Like they got beaten up. I mean, yes, throwing in the canal is a bit much, but again, you know, you're in Tokyo, you get kicked into the fucking restaurant. You're in Amsterdam, you get thrown into the canal, right? It's an action movie 101. And then, this is the best part. After all of this, after the reaction, the Israeli government announces sending 2 official government planes to evacuate the fans out of Amsterdam, which if you're a football firm, if you're a hooligan firm, you will never be able to let that down. No other fan will. Like, you will be considered pussies for the rest of your life. Songs will be made. Europeans have a great talent for making up like songs based on popular tune. that like they'll adapt the lyrics to be like, you guys are pussies because you had Plane to Evacuate with you or something along those lines.
I mean, it's like your, what did I compare it to? It's like your parents coming to pick you up from the sleepover because you pissed your pants and like started crying.
Yes,
like it's really absolutely embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. Like daddy had to come get you, you know,
after you were being a shit kid all night.
Daddy had to fly planes, like intercontinental flight to come get you.
Because they're boors on the plane, they found themselves singing Death to Arabs again because there is no lessons learned with these people. And then
when they got to the airport,
there was a big arrival party by the fans who didn't go to welcome the fans who went, and that's like they're coming back from the fucking front. Like they just did a fucking stint of the Psalm or whatever. Like it's insane. And this is where the propaganda angle comes. I've been losing my fucking mind because I've been messaging like this story has broken in my chest, my friend and stuff. All of us who follow football are like, okay, yeah, this is an average Thursday, whatever, it's fine. They got beaten up. They were bored, they were ogres, but they got beaten up and it's fine. But then like we start seeing like people being like, this is Kristallnacht, this is a pogrom. Like one fucking person was like, it's happening again, and underneath the photo of Anne Frank.
Yes, famous, yes. Anne Frank comparisons are crazy. I mean, like, the first thing
Beitar
I saw...
Jerusalem Ultra Anne Frank, famous for her hooliganism. She was arrested leaving the house in Amsterdam to go to a stadium to beat the crap out of Arabs. That's exactly what happened.
The Jerusalem Post, I think, was the first, like, publication I saw that called it a pogrom, and I, like, oh, my God, okay. And then, like, the ADL issued a statement, Yeah, I mean, we're not joking, right? Like, there's a tweet by Biden. I mean, it wasn't Biden, let's be honest. Right? Like, by Biden's team. Like, Justin Trudeau is, like, talking about this. Very, like, heads of state in Europe are like, we cannot return to, like, the evil of the past. It's like, what are we talking about here? What the fuck is happening?
Yeah, it's the way it's been covered has just driven me insane over the past couple of days. Like, I think it's, like, it's heart to darkness shit. It's, like, complete madness.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I mean, the New York Times covered it. And while the New York Times did admit that, like, look, Israeli fans were saying, like, horrible things and chanting terrible things, you had to go down six or seven paragraphs in order. Yeah, it's paragraph seven buried on an inside page. I'm getting all this from Mondo Weiss. But, yeah, I mean, Mondo Weiss is really calling out, like, look at how the West is covering this. And they even give credit to Forward, Jewish independent nonprofit, and the reporter Arno Rosenfeld, who, like, he writing about Dutch Jews feeling unsafe. But even the Dutch Jews are like, yeah, I mean, the Israeli fans were being like,
so it's funny you bring that up, Connor. The propaganda shit is crazy to me, because it wasn't until I think today that I found out that Mossad had, like, in addition to sending their own, let's say, bodyguards, right? They're not sending pencil pushers to this thing, right? These are guys to ostensibly protect these football fans, or, I mean, I don't know if these qualify as ultras, Amr, but these are thugs that they're sending with them, right? Like, in addition to this, I was unaware of this because of the American election that has unfortunately reduced my news intake to solely that. But Mossad had made a few public statements, and various organs in Israel had made public statements to the fact that, like, Dutch Jews, not the Israelis that were going to see the game, that Dutch Jews should be careful this week because of potential, like, outbursts. And something about this just, like, smacks. I mean, I'm going to admit to our listeners, I'm being conspiratorial here, but, like, this is Mossad we're talking about, right? That some of this seems almost like too on the nose, like too contrived, because this has exploded in a media milieu where, like, all of a sudden, timed with the Trump election, all of a sudden this explosive news story about how there's a return of anti-Semitism in Europe, right? Which is a thing that they've been talking about a lot in the past year, by the way.
Yeah.
And now they have this thing to point to. And I guess I'm broadcasting it on this show, but not, let's be honest, right? Like, I don't compete with, CNN. And those guys are all saying that this is a pogrom. This is, like, being manufactured, it feels like, in real time. And I don't know what to do about that, right? I don't know if there's anything you can do, but it's astounding to witness.
I think we just kind of have to, like, sit back and watch how this all plays out. I mean, if something happens in Amsterdam, like an act of violence after the Israeli soccer team leaves, like, there will be an investigation. There will be people saying, like, Mossad planned this or Mossad predicted this, right? We're going to see that. What's really astounding to me is that the West is getting in line, going along with this narrative. I mean, Macron promised 4,000 police officers at a soccer game in Paris for the France-Israel soccer match.
Yes. Okay. So
bananas. 4,000 police officers.
A small army.
I'm so excited for that because okay. So when this all broke, my two thoughts were two things. The Israeli national team is set to play France, the French national team in Paris, but not in the Parc des Princes, which is the PSG stadium, but in the Stade de France, which is the national team stadium. And the Stade de France is technically not in Paris proper. It's in Saint-Denis, which is immigrant hotspot. Like a lot of, it's a banlieue, it's a ghetto. The Saint-Denis is like where a lot of the Algerians and West Africans live. So I'm just rubbing my hands with glee as to what's going to happen. And then Maccabi's next away game is Besiktas in Istanbul. We'll say the UEFA have already stepped in now there and have announced that that game is going to be played in a neutral location, not in Istanbul. Which, again, what other club gets this level of coddling? What are we fucking doing here? But yeah, to your point, Connor, 4,000 police officers are set to be involved with the Israeli match next Thursday.
I guess my question there, because I wanted to ask you a little bit about hooliganism later on, but I'll have one question right now. Like, will people be generally upset of like, there's so many police and security staff here that we can't enact any kind of hooliganism, any of the like good old fashioned fun that we used to get into? Like, we are now expected to be quiet and follow the rules. Like, is there going to be some kind of pushback from just your average day to day soccer football fan?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, okay, first of all, with national teams, it's different because with national teams, like, these games are usually higher security anyways, just because they're national teams. So the hooliganism aspect with national teams usually erupts in major tournaments. And when it does, it becomes a city-wide affair, like no amount of cops. Like when the Russians and the English were fighting in Marseille, for example.
When that kind of shit pops off, the cops can't stop them anyway. Right.
Yeah,
we're burning cars
all across the city, like just running. Yeah, but because this isn't a major tournament where you'll have like thousands of fans from different countries, this is one away game. I don't think that there's going to be a pushback. I don't expect that. The pushback that will happen will be if the Israelis show up and start singing like death to Arabs, whatever. Again, much like Amsterdam, Paris is a large North African population, and they're not very fucking pro-Israel.
A lot bigger, I'd say. A lot bigger.
Then it seems like they're just setting themselves up to create like a self-fulfilling prophecy of like, it's going to be like, oh my gosh, look at all these Africans in France.
Wouldn't that be strange, Connor?
Look at all these Arabs in France. Look at all these Arabs in Istanbul. Anti-Semitism in Europe is on the rise. Like, so you're just like setting it all up.
So one of the things that's been pointed to in like the kind of pieces that have been circulating now is that the Amsterdam mayor has basically responded to the violence of Thursday night by basically shutting down the city for like 3 days, right? He said, okay, we're not, no protests, basically like don't come out on the streets at all, right? For at least 3 days until this like has all blown over and calmed down. And that has immediately been seized upon as like basically an admission of guilt.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about Amr? Because he said another thing that was very funny, because there's a particular thing about the team in Amsterdam that like makes this particularly ironic and funny. Do we want to talk about that?
The fact that Ajax are historically a Jewish club of the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a bit tricky because like the way it's often reported is like either exaggerated or under. It's never treated with like the historical context that is necessary. So the old Ajax stadium, not the current one, the Johan Cruyff Arena, but the old Amsterdam Arena, was set in the part of Amsterdam that was the Jewish quarter. At least it was before the Holocaust, etc. And even after World War II, there was a significant Jewish population in Amsterdam. And the fact that the stadium was in that area meant that a lot of their fans were Jewish. And the stadium and the club, the fact that they had a large Jewish fan base, the fact that the stadium is in the Jewish quarter, gave the club association with Judaism. Now, the club and the fans embraced that. They started calling themselves the Jews or the Yids, right? And they'd wave Israeli flags around in matches and things of that nature. No, I mean, obviously Israeli flags are loaded, so loaded meaning there, but for them it's like, yeah, we are the Yids, what are you gonna do about it, right?
And to be honest, this has like a lot of precedent in like football culture, right? Like if the club is like next to if the club stadium is like next to a steel mill, even when the steel mill closed down, they're still like the steel guys or something like that, right?
Yes.
This is like, well, they all have these like nicknames and stuff.
Yeah, the closest analogy is Tottenham, a club in London that is also in the area of London that is predominantly Jewish. And they also call themselves the Yids and have a sort of Jewish identity associated with the club because of the area that the club is in. This is something, again, because in American sports, it's very often the franchises, and I'm doing air quotes here, will relocate, like the Oakland Raiders will become the Las Vegas Raiders or whatever. Like there's no understanding, because like these clubs in Europe are like over 100 years old, many of them. Like they're deep, deep roots in the community. And to your point, Alec, like, yeah, like even if the steel mill closes, it's still quote unquote a working class club. Now with the commercialization of sport to the top level, it's been diluted. It's been heavily diluted. And the sort of the way that sport has become a marketing thing has made it a lot less prevalent at the top level. At the local level, you still have those associations. But it's hard to understate how important these connections to the community are, because most people in Europe support a club because their dad supports the club, because their granddad supported that club before their great-granddad supported that club. It's a hereditary thing, because you know, you come from this town, your family supports the town's club. And that's the way of representing yourself to other towns, other cities, and so on. Or if you're in a big city, it's a way of demarcating yourself within that big city, whether it's class or sect or religion or race or whatever. So like Celtic versus Rangers, Catholic versus Protestant, Irish Republicanism versus Unionism. Or like in the case of, Real Madrid versus Atletico Madrid is like upper class versus working class, things of that nature. With Ajax, because they identify themselves so heavily as a Jewish club, explicitly so by the fans, other fans are like, okay, fine, we'll try to round you up because you guys are the Jewish fans. So, for example, Feyenoord, the big rival of Ajax, have, you know, they've adopted anti-Semitism sort of as a de rigueur way of pissing off Ajax. So part of that includes chants, Hamas, Hamas, Duden in Hasgas, which is Hamas, Hamas, boost to the gas, and then making hissing noises and wearing gas masks.
Jesus Christ.
Which, again, you know, the average American goes to a sports game and they're like, defense, defense, or go team, go. There's no, you know, we have to find a specific way of attacking the other fans. Again, I'm not condoning this shit. It's fucking insane. And like,
it's
cringe, folks.
They're posting cringe.
Yeah, it's cringe. Don't do it. But it's, and this is a problem, right? Because when a club identifies so heavily with a certain ethnicity or a certain sect or race or whatever, the rivals will just jump on that immediately. When they're like, you know, the opposite is true, for example, in Glasgow, right, between Celtics and Rangers. Celtic, being the Irish team, the Catholic team, will wave a lot of Irish flags. And part of that is also solidarity with Palestine. So Celtic teams will wave Palestinian flags instead of fans. So Rangers, because Celtic is Irish, Republican, and pro-Palestine, will just wave Israeli flags. Not because they're Jewish or because they support it, just because they're like, fuck you, you support Palestine, so therefore we support Israel. And of course, Rangers fans have their own chants towards Irish Republicanism, including the one that goes, we'll wade in our knees and Fenian blood, etc., and so on. You know, classic thing of that nature.
I'm very curious to see what France is going to say to Israel then, in this game that's coming up.
Well, if they're smart, they're going to play this game behind closed doors. They probably won't, because the money is too much. We'll see. Israel has already, so the Israel national team right now is playing most of its games in Serbia and Hungary, I believe. So because of the situation in Israel, like the team's already been in quote unquote in exile or whatever you want to call it. But the way they've been doing in terms of like going on away trips, they've already played Italy, I believe, and stuff. The security has been ramped up completely. Like the 4,000 cops is predictable. This was going to happen with or without what happened in Amsterdam. Just because like with the Israeli national team, especially it being a symbol of the country, everywhere they go, people are pissed off. Like, why are these people here? And again, by the way, going back to the Maccabi Tel Aviv fans just for a second. Not just the Mossad guys, the explicitly Mossad guys, but like these fans were reserves in Gaza just months ago. Like these aren't just like the way the news has been reporting is like these civilians just went out to enjoy football and got beat up. And
these are just regular fans like me and you. These are just Israeli fans, just like you and I would go to a football game. And it's like, nah, I don't quite think so. Right? Like, have you seen the videos on the day before? Like, are you sure that that's the case?
not just the videos, but like one of the guys had his passport taken and he was doxxed by the Amsterdam locals. And it turns out there were pictures of him in Gaza 5 months ago. Like he was, this was like, you know, these guys were intimately involved in the IDF, not just, you know, local David from the pub who went down to the game to enjoy the Wii game with his pals, you know?
I mean, that's to be expected for all of them, right? Since there's compulsory military service.
Yeah.
You don't have to go if you don't want to. You can spend a short stint in prison if you don't want to go.
Yeah, isn't it like 6 months if you don't want to go?
Yeah. Many people have. They're pretty much the only Israelis I respect.
Yes.
But by the way, like somewhat to this point, I think that the response here, right, this is propaganda after all, right? So I'm going to talk about propaganda because, like, as I said before, it's being spun in real time. The mayor of Amsterdam's response basically concedes that this is like anti-Semitism. And the implication there, especially for Americans, right? And I think a lot of the audience for this is American. One, like Amr's saying, don't really understand the ambient level of violence that exists in hooliganism and how European soccer as a sport is fundamentally different than like going to an NFL game here or like a Little League game or something. Americans kind of imagine the continuum of sports as I go to my son's T-ball game, right? All the way up to, you know, I go to the World Series. Right. And in all of those, right, like, I mean, there's beer at the World Series and like maybe guys get drunk, you know, somewhere in the town and get into a fight, but not at the game. Right. Like that never happens. And hooliganism is a reality of European football that is like at least what would you say, Amr? Like at least tolerated. Right. It's one of those things where like it happens. You like roll your eyes because like you're not like an ultra or whatever. But
So yeah. even when the violence does happen in American sports, it's often stochastic and extremely individualized. Like one fan will beat up another fan in a stadium or outside, but it's just one versus one or a couple of friends versus a couple of friends versus the organized hooliganism of Europe, where it's like away fans 300 strong, like marauding through, you know, a town. And to your point about tolerating it, Alex, the thing about this that's really also insane is like usually when there are big riots, like we're talking like London after the Euros or you know, Feyenoord away or whatever, when these things hit a certain critical mass of violence, you'll have like the intellectual class of the respective countries writing articles being like, we're better than this, you know, hand-wringing, the classic, you know, the lib professor shit, you know, violence is bad, etc. But
is soccer making us more violent? Is football, is the beautiful game making us more violent? It's like, oh, please.
Yeah, but generally, you have to hit a critical mass for us to reach that level. For 12 wounded, which is the casualty rate for the Amsterdam scenes, like this would be like back page news. This would be like third level paragraph, you know. Like the fact that you're writing articles calling it a pogrom is only because it involves Israelis.
The fact that it's international news. And by the way, right, like to the point about it being kind of like individuals or clubs, right? Like not wide scale riots, that's also kind of descriptive of most of the violence that surrounds like stuff in the United States, right? Like a bar fight, basically. This is not a bar fight. Like if Mossad agents are there, a lot of this is going on with the explicit permission and acknowledgement of like a state. Like it's taken this tone where it's like everything is super heightened. And then if you just read the headline in the first paragraph, it's just like, oh, guys that went to a soccer game got beat up. And that is not the full picture at all. And just one last point, Amr, like to ask is like, how did this happen? Right. Because from what I've heard, the only quote that I've been able to find is like, this is the mayor of Amsterdam. The mayor later said that the match itself was not initially flagged as high risk as Ajax is traditionally associated with Judaism, which is what we talked about before. Like Mossad came out and said that they were not only coming, but that like Jews in the Netherlands should be afraid. And like somehow these guys weren't like ushered back to their hotels, right? Like single file. By the way, after they like freaked the fuck out during the game, what happened here?
This is where I myself am curious, because I haven't found any conclusive sort of connection between where, how, because also, and I was observing this, like the groups of Maccabee fans that were being ambushed were very small in number, okay, which is where my confusion lies, because usually the fans would be escorted en masse from the stadium back to the square with all the hotels, right? So the fact that these groups of fans split, it's either they were escorted back to the square and then they split there, or there was no escort. I don't know where the failure was. And it being considered low risk is stupid. First of all, that should have never happened. Every Maccabi game should be considered high risk. Like, Jesus Christ, like, you know, we've seen kids' brains and people on fire because of Israel's policy.
Like, and Maccabi fans, I think, have also like put hospitalized. There was like a Greek guy that got hospitalized, like just like a year before.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Yes, because they were away in Greece last year at some point, a few months ago. Or was it last year or this season? It must have been last year, because I believe it was in the knockout stages of the Europa League. They beat the crap. It was an Egyptian guy in Greece, in Athens, who was carrying a Palestine flag, and it was just one guy, right? And like dozens of them jumped in. They hospitalized them. There's videos of them kicking him while he's down, kicking him down the fucking stairs. Another thing, like once you're down, typically like people won't kick you. I mean, this happened in Amsterdam, like people were getting kicked while they were down. But like this guy got hospitalized, like properly, seriously hospitalized by the Maccabi fans, which shows also that like they're capable of organized violence. This isn't like the way the media is writing about this is like mom and pop fans getting attacked by youth hoodlums, right? Like the image of the Maccabi fans is like, you know, dads and their kids or whatever, where it's like, no, they're all like the same people who hospitalized this Egyptian guy. Like, these are guys who, they're young adults for the most part, or middle-aged, and they're, because of the conscription, mind you, they're also very well versed in violence.
And by the way, like, again, speaking of the propaganda of this, Geert Wilders, right, the like Dutch, let's just say far right, a freak politician, immediately comes out and says, like, these are violent Muslims attacking good Jews. We need to deport them out of the country, right? Like, Europeans, right, and the far right especially, are going to make hay out of this. They're going to use this for its intended effect.
Oh, yes. For them, this is a blessing, because they can point and be like, look, we said those Moroccans are dirty. We need to get them out of here. Get them out of here.
You know? Criminal Muslims is a quote from Geert Wilders.
Jesus
Criminal
Christ.
Muslims. I don't know. I don't have any specific knowledge that tells me that this is like an intended provocation. But at the very least, this is the concept of never letting like a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, Amr, there's more to come on this, right? Because Israeli teams are going to keep playing in Europe, and I hope they won't, but I'm guessing they're going to keep doing all the shit that they're doing in Gaza. So I guess we'll see what happens the next time they show up.
Oh, man, I'm just rubbing my hands with glee right now. I just want to see a bunch of very angry Parisian Algerians and Moroccans, like, just waiting. Just like, by the way, also, I made the joke online, but like, the people that primarily were responsible for the response to the Maccabi fans were Dutch Moroccans, right? Now, Moroccans and Algerians have a rivalry, like a historic rivalry. So you can believe that the Algerians in Paris are just like gritting their teeth, being like, the Moroccans did what? We can't let them outdo us. We need to fucking one up them. We need to go beat the crap out of some.
I can't believe those guys got to beat up. How many Israelis did they beat up? Oh, we could beat those numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only 12? We got this.
I'm just going to let my conspiracy brain go crazy now, right? Like, if something insane and weird happens like this in Paris, now there's like a trend, right? If this happens again, and it's like a huge news story of like, you know, exploding anti-Semitism across Europe, like, I'm going to be on full alert, right? My brain is going to be firing on all cylinders.
Like I said, I don't know football, but is there a possibility this could end with like basically a Mickey Mouse ring for the Israeli team where they win the World Cup? And it's just kind of like, this was so fake and forced and staged.
Not the World Cup. I mean, but
I don't know.
This end in them being banned from, I don't know, European soccer leagues or something? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
we don't have time to get into this, but like when Russia invaded Ukraine, it took 5 days for UEFA to ban Russia and all Russian clubs from European competition. It's been over a fucking year. Why would we be banning these people? Fuck them off. Get them out of here.
People have been saying this. People have been saying this.
Well,
anyway,
I think that's going to about do it for this week of Propagandos. Amr, thank you again so much for joining us on such short notice. We really appreciate this. This is a great primer. I feel like I've learned a lot. I'm walking away with some good info. I hope our listeners are too.
Thank you for having me. We need to bring hooliganism to North America. That's my take. We need to get
the closest I've seen. I said the Boston Red Sox. When the Boston Red Sox won the World Series, I did see footage of like they're climbing up poles and flipping cars. What's going on in Boston?
But again, it's stochastic violence. It's not organized. We need to have firms. We need to have the Raptors boys coming down and beating the crap out of them Sixers guys.
You know, a lot of people theorize that would happen after that one movie with the Green Joker.
Green Street, don't fucking quote Green Street. I mean, I fucking hate that. We need to
make an
episode of that movie. It's fucking atrocious.
All right.
Actually, that's actual soccer. It's actual football propaganda. It's really, yes. Really funny. And Americans love that fucking movie. Every frat boy fucking loved and played that movie when I was in school. And like people, you were honestly scared that like hooliganism was going to come to the United States. And then it just fizzled out. Nobody has the energy.
You want to watch a real hooligan movie? Watch Football Factory. Watch Football Factory and watch The Firm. Those are the two important. The Firm with Gary Oldman and Football Factory. You watch those two, that's a lot more serious than fucking Elijah Wood trying to be a hard man. The softest boy you've ever seen in your life trying to be a hard man. Get him out of here.
Football
All right,
Factory.
You heard it here first, folks. The Firm and the Football Factory, we're bringing hooliganism home.
All right.
It's coming home.
We might have a hooliganism episode coming up. All right. That about does it for us. As always, listeners, excelsior and keep your eyes on the skies. That's our new catchphrase.
Hate our outro. It's so dumb.
It's so, it's so bad. It's cringe.
It's
shit,
so
man.
Terrible.
You're doing cringe again.
I thought it was kind of good, but okay.
I actually think it's
based.
We've done it enough to where I kind of like it now, even though I cringe literally every time he does it. It's so funny.
Well,
I listen to it and I always think about cutting it from the outro and then I always leave it in.
I'm just like, the first time I said it, I like panicked and didn't know what I was doing. And we just like kind of left it in.
I love it.
It is funny, you and Boston both messaged me do you want to do an episode of football? I'm the football guy. I'm the capital F, capital G football guy.
Well, I'm just glad we scooped Boston. He's in our Discord, and he's been getting a little cheeky for me, so...
He messaged me first, but he prefers to do tomorrow instead of today. It's better for his schedule. So
that's too bad.
That's what happens when you sit on something, man. You know.